Will you help me welcome our keynote speaker, who's traveled all the way from South Jersey Shores to carry her message of depth and weight. Welcome Kim G!
Good evening, everyone. You guys are crazy. Just so you know, this is kind of crazy. So I want to say thanks. So I am so impressed with this committee. This is like nothing I've ever seen in Overeaters Anonymous. I maybe have seen it in AA stuff, but this is unbelievable. So let's just give a round of applause for everyone who organized this. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Kim Greik, and I am from southern New Jersey, right outside of Philadelphia. I've been in OA since 1994. However, I've only been recovered about 7.5 years. And just so you know, physically, Karen. I did do a little album of pictures.
Thank you.
Thank you. So my top weight was a size 24 when I was about like 23 years old. I was diagnosed morbidly obese on a chart. And the first thing I did, of course, was go eat more, because that really makes sense. And then I became bulimic, and I got down to a size 14, and I was still the same person. And I was more insane in my bulimia, especially with my exercise bulimia, than I ever was in my obesity. And that's actually when I came into Overeaters Anonymous, because I started to realize that apparently you get to a certain size and, you know, I mean, my fantasy was, I thought if I got to a size 6, Brad Pitt would be waiting at my door with a diamond ring. Like, that's what I thought. And then even in Overeaters Anonymous, I dieted down to a size 2, where I actually lost my menstrual cycle and I started to lose my hair. So I have experienced all facets of this disease. And what it tells me is that food and weight is not my problem. And I can tell you that the difference, the most simplest way I can put the difference was the first 17 years in Overeaters Anonymous, what I would do is I'd put the food down and I would face the food and I would fight it with everything I had. I would throw all the tools at it, get better sponsor. I mean, I knew one time I was going to stay abstinent because I bought Tupperware and I'm really cheap and I actually bought the brand name Tupperware. I'm like, this is going to do it. And it did for like 2 days. But what happened 7.5 years ago was I got to a level of desperation and I put the food down and I faced the solution. And I ran at the solution with everything I had and I recovered in about 6 weeks. So I've had 7.5 years of contented abstinence. When I first came into OA, I had 6 years of, as Wendy so beautifully put, batshit crazy abstinence. So I did the same things in the sense I used all the tools, but instead of using the tools as a way to control the problem, I was using the tools as a way to seek the solution. And that was the difference for me. So I just want to let you know, too, there's going to be some homework for tomorrow. So I'm going to let you know at the end of the night what that is, but to kind of give you guys a heads up. And what I'm going to try to do, we're probably going to go to maybe like 5 after 8 instead of 8 o'clock, just to kind of finish up some stuff. So I'm going to try to go over most of step one today. Because I don't know in your area, but in my area, the most common thing when you start a meeting was how many compulsive overeaters are here tonight, and we would all raise our hand, right? Well, what I realized was that for 17 years, what I was saying was, I'm fat and I don't want to be fat anymore, or I'm not fat and I'm terrified of getting fat again. And that is not what a compulsive overeater is, and that is not what step one is. I think the biggest thing that the Big Book did for me was to teach me what a compulsive overeater was. And when I really understood what I suffered from, suddenly the steps became very important to me. Up to that point, it was kind of like playing Twister. Right hand red, left hand blue, maybe try some step 2, maybe do a step 9, maybe do a step 11. I didn't understand the urgency, and I didn't understand I needed to be done in order. So the first thing we have to do is say, do we need do we have this problem so we know if we need the solution? So first we're going to look at the doctor's opinion. And for those of you who don't know Dr. Silkworth, Dr. Silkworth is actually a neurologist, and he worked with his estimate. Can you guys hear me if I'm back this far off the mic? Because I feel like I'm okay. It's estimated he worked with about 50,000 alcoholics. And he started to notice some patterns. So there was a certain percentage of alcoholics that would come in and from the consequences of alcohol, and he would dry them out, and they would leave the hospital, and he would never see them again. Then there was another classification that would come in. He would clean them out physically. They might come back a second or third time. And he would say to them, you know what, it looks to me like you shouldn't drink at all. It seems when you start drinking, you can't control yourself. So my suggestion is just don't drink. And those people left the hospital, and he never saw them again. But there was a certain percentage, about 10%, that no matter how many times he told them the consequences if they had that first drink, and no matter how many times he physically removed them from the allergic reaction from the alcohol, they would continue to come back to the hospital over and over and over. And he called these the chronic alcoholics. So you're going to see in this book, they're going to talk about as seriously alcoholic as we were, chronic alcoholic. That is what we're looking for. Overeaters Anonymous is not for, two-thirds of Americans are obese. Two-thirds of Americans are not compulsive overeaters. I mean, the simple fact is conventional diets work. If you decrease your calories and you increase your exercise, you're going to lose weight. A lot of people sit at a computer for 12 hours and eat at McDonald's three times a day and are fat, and they're not compulsive overeaters. So what this doctor's opinion is going to teach me, and hopefully I'm going to be able to identify in with, am I part of that 10%? Because if I'm part of that 10%, suddenly the rest of the book is absolutely necessary. And until I know I'm part of that 10%, the rest of the book might be interesting. And that's when I'm not going to do the step work. So what we're going to do is go to Roman numeral 28 in the doctor's opinion, which is XXVIII, because we have this twofold illness. So I have to know what that means. What does it mean to suffer from the allergy of the body, and what does it mean to have the mental twist? So if we go to that first paragraph at the top of 28, Roman numeral 28, it says, we believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is the manifestation of an allergy, and that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. So do we have any alcoholics in this room too? Okay, so I personally am not an alcoholic. So if I sat down with anyone in here as an alcoholic and we both had 5 shots of tequila, we would both get drunk because that is the normal response to alcohol. But what's going to happen to me is I'm going to feel a little bit sick, a little bit nauseous, a little bit tipsy, a little bit out of control. I really don't like that feeling, so I'm not going to want any more alcohol. But the alcoholic is going to get charged up, excited, got to have more, woo, let's go to the Rockies kind of feeling, and they're going to want more and more alcohol. So if 9 out of 10 people react like me, and 1 out of 10 people react like the alcoholic, it simply means they're having an allergic reaction. That was really important to me, because I felt like I was weak-willed. I felt like I was a bad person. And I started to realize I just have an allergic reaction to a substance. It also explained to me when I was a little kid and I was at a birthday party, and I would have my piece of cake, and I wanted more cake. And I'm watching my friend have her half a piece of cake, and she's suddenly talking to the other girls. And I'm like, I want that willpower. Why do I have that willpower? But what I realize now is my friend wasn't eating the cake. You know why? She didn't want any more cake. Do you ever hear people say something's too sweet? I thought they were lying. I really did. They mean it. They're going to feel a little bit sick and a little bit nauseous if they have any more cake. That's why they're not having it. So what I'm doing is I'm looking at them and assuming the world experiences my binge foods like I do, and they don't. So there's no guilt and there's no shame. But at the same time, I can't have my binge foods and think that allergic reaction is not going to happen. Because I have to tell you, what I tried to do for many years in Overeaters Anonymous, because I thought weight was my problem, it was as if I was allergic to strawberries and I break out in a rash. And what I tried to do was eat the strawberry and try to control and not have the rash. That's crazy. Why would anyone think they can have a strawberry and biologically change that their body's not going to have a rash? Yet that's what I was doing over and over and over. So once I identify what those allergic foods are, I can never, ever, 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 ever have them again. I heard a speaker say it beautifully. What are those foods that you are going to barter, you're going to negotiate, and you're going to grieve over? Because we are blessed in this fellowship. We all have the same definition of abstinence in this room. We have to abstain from those foods those ingredients and those behaviors which create the phenomenon of craving. However, what creates the phenomenon of craving in me most likely won't create the phenomenon of craving in you. We have a lot of things that overlap, but a lot of things that are very individual. So we have to do that investigation in Overeaters Anonymous that we don't have to do in other fellowships. But once we have that investigation done, we are the same as the alcoholic. How many of you have heard in meetings, well, I wish I was an alcoholic because all I have to do is not drink? Well, you know what? If alcoholics didn't drink, they would have altitude sickness because they wouldn't be drinking water. They drink water. They drink orange juice. They drink tea. And they drink a hell of a lot of coffee. I eat and I enjoy my food. I just don't eat my binge food. And what is beautiful and what is wonderful is because of these 12 steps, I don't care if I don't eat my binge food. That's what Overeaters Anonymous promises. It doesn't promise us that we're going to be strong one day at a time, going to bed exhausted and finally beating the food. It promises us that we're not going to want the food, that we're going to be neutral around the food, that we're going to be of service to other people to help them discover their absence so they can have that same promise that we've been given in this program. So if we go down to the bottom of that same page, it says men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. So what I'm chasing is the effect. I thought, you know what, I really like Oreos. Teach me how to have 3 Oreos, and I'm going to be good. And if that was really true, why were they eating food when it was burnt? Why were they eating food when it was stale? One of my diet techniques, I cannot stand coconut. I mean, even when I buy a shampoo and it has coconut in it, I have to throw it out. I can't stand the smell of it. And in high school, I would make coconut cookies because that way I'm not going to eat them. And I would eat the damn cookies. I would eat through the disgusting thing I hit with a stringy, ugh, gross cook because there was something else in those cookies that was creating an effect that I needed. So think about it. When you go to the grocery store, what are the aisles that you've memorized? What are the aisles you have no idea what's down in? When you go to an all-you-can-eat buffet, what are those items that you get angry that waiter didn't fill up because there's not any of it left? And what are those ingredients that you don't even know that someone says, oh, wasn't that great broccoli rabe at the all-you-can-eat buffet? And you're like, you had broccoli rabe? No idea. You know, I don't know. You guys are used to snow up here, but I always use this in my hometown. When a snowstorm comes in, what are those foods that you will go out in a snowstorm in order to get? I have never panicked about not having enough broccoli in my house. Never. So we know what our binge foods are, we just don't want to admit them. So that's why we need a recovered person that can help us see what are those common ingredients. And that's what, this is just my opinion now. I think the greatest gift is to get down to ingredients. It's just so much simpler than memorizing 57 million foods. If you know your ingredients, you can look at a package and it's so much simpler. So it says that even though the sensation is elusive, they admit it's injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. Their alcoholic life is the only normal one. I always use this silly example about the movie Ocean's 11. And I can see George Clooney, and people tell me he's good looking, and I agree he's good looking. But once Brad Pitt comes on that screen, I don't notice anything else. Do you guys watch that show, The Blind Spot, or whatever? That young guy Ronan in it? He's a young Brad Pitt. I have to rewind because once he's on screen, the dialogue disappears. I don't even know what, I totally am clueless as to what they're talking about. I did not make a decision to like that kind of guy. Since I was 13, I get butterflies. I walk into a room of 50 guys, I know which ones are going to frost my cookies. And it's a physiological response. I had it happen. I'm 51 years old. I was a couple months ago now. I rounded a corner and I'm like, oh. And then I was humiliated because the kid was probably 24 years old. I'm like, oh my God. I couldn't control it. It's just a physiological response, the way I have a physiological response to certain foods. So let's go on. It says, they are restless, irritable, and discontent unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few bites. Now, saying unless, meaning restless, irritable, discontent, is about being abstinent. The abstinence is my real problem. How many of you have a saying on here, abstinence makes you feel better? Nothing tastes as good as abstinence feels. That's bullshit. Abstinence sucks. It sucks. You mean you want me to be abstinent in the morning? And the afternoon and the evening? Continuously? That's painful. That is why I eat. Sobriety is my problem. I get restless, irritable, discontent. I get so uncomfortable in my own skin. And I have no other way to get relief from that except what I have learned since I was a child, which is to have a couple bites and go... And unfortunately, that lasts for 4 or 5 seconds. So now we're talking about what is that cycle that we're going to be in. So it says here, after they have succumbed to the desire again. Succumbed, the definition I love, is to yield to a superior force. So what I call it is straw vision. You know, the desire is like the mental obsession. I'm looking at these beautiful Rocky Mountains. Things are gorgeous. I walk into a room. There's a donut. And the only thing I can see is that donut. Nothing else exists. That's the mental twist coming on us. And I succumb. I yield to that superior force. Now, how many of you in this area use the word slip? I had a slip. Now, my feeling is we're doing that because we don't want to count our days over. I mean, just eating the top of a wedding cake is a slip. If you ate the bottom part, that's great. It's amazing how we can use that information. I remember a girl calling me and telling me that she had a slip, and I asked her what happened. And she said, well, I was out with my family at a restaurant, and I had dessert. And I said, can we agree that a slip is an accidental fall? And she said, yes. I said, so you're defining a slip as being at a restaurant, asking for a dessert menu, waiting for the waiter to come over, making your order, waiting for him to come back, and having the dessert as a slip. And she just started laughing. This is a serious illness, and we have to be serious about it. This is not about shaming anybody. This is not about you're a bad person. But we're so attached to days, and we forget about the fact the point of Overeaters Anonymous is to recover. I can tell you, during that 6 years of abstinence that I first had, if you asked me how long I was abstinent, I could tell you down to the minute since I had a bagel. I felt every freaking second of it. When someone asks me now how long I've been abstinent, I have to think about it. And I have to tell you, I don't even know my abstinence date. I had I'll talk about a break. I broke my ankle, and I remember binging while I had the temporary cast on, and I'm in bed, I'm having to get my parents to buy my binge food. And after I got that temporary cast, sometime within the next 2 weeks, I got abstinent. So I just used January 31st because I know I broke my ankle on January 9th. It was sometime in that month. I used to write my abstinence date in my big book or my 12 and 12 or wherever because that's what I was attached to. If that's all you're attached to, don't short sell yourself. This program is so much more than counting days. So after we succumb to the desire again, right? Then the phenomenon of craving develops. So the phenomenon of craving doesn't develop until we eat the food. Now, here's my personal experience. Day one and two, I'm pretty good. I got enough running for me, right? Day 3 to 5, day 3 to 7, I am freaking dying. I really think you can die between lunch and dinner. Like, I am, like, dying. Day 7 to 14, 70 to 1, I'm feeling good. Because, see, my allergy's not being triggered. And for me personally, I'm sleeping a little bit better. That 7-second delay when people are talking to me, I'm starting to understand them. I'm not saying F you every 5 seconds. I'm starting to, you know, I'm feeling the freedom from the allergy not being triggered. I'm going into Overeaters Anonymous saying, God, remove the obsession. God doesn't done shit because I haven't done shit. But that's what I'm saying. And suddenly a day, I get my 30-day coin, and suddenly I'm in the food. I'm like, how the heck did that happen? Because all I did was treat a twofold illness with a one-fold solution of abstinence. Abstinence treats the allergy. The steps treat the mental twist. If we don't get into the step work, that feeling of the freedom from the allergy will only last so long. So it says here, then we go through the well-known stages of a spree. You know, I remember when I moved back, you know, being a big girl with a college degree, I moved back in with my parents. And I had a job about 10 minutes from my parents' house, and I would be good all day long because I don't like to eat in public. and I would hit a grocery store on the way home, and I loved icing, so I buy a big tub of icing, and I buy cake mix. Never made a cake in my life, but I bought the cake mix because it just looks a little bit better to the person checking me out. And as I'm in line, I can feel my shoulders starting to relax. I don't even have the food. It's just in my cart, and I can feel myself starting to relax. But by the time I get to the register, I have to put M&Ms or something in there because I can't even handle the 3 or 4 minute drive to my parents' house. I got to get something in my mouth now. So that spree is an emerging remorseful with a firm resolution, I am not going to eat again. Swear to God, Monday morning is going to be the end. The end of the month. You know, January 1st, this is the year. 11:59, binging my brains out because, you know, there's a starving kids in Africa and I don't want to waste this food, so I'm just going to finish this back. But over and over again, I'm in that cycle. And it says here, this is repeated over and over and over, unless this person has an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. So I want to put a pin in that for a minute. Let's go to the next page, XXX. And five paragraphs down, it says, all these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. So I don't care if you're a 100-pounder, if you're a 30-pound yo-yo dieter, if you're bulimic, if you do laxatives, if you do exercise, if you throw up, if you're anorexic. This is what we have in common. We all have the allergy of the body. We just control our consequences differently. It says at the end, the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Now my keen alcoholic mind sees the word suggested next to abstinence. Apparently it's suggested. But if you read the whole sentence, the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Now this book was written in 1937. It's the same thing in 2018. They're cutting our stomachs out. They're doing a lot of stuff to us because they think it's a physical allergy only. The only way I'm not going to get the allergic reaction from the food is not to eat it. Entire abstinence. So let's go back. They're telling me I have to have an entire psychic change. What does that mean? That's what the mental twist is about. I have to put the food down first, and then I have to work steps 1 through 12 and have a spiritual awakening as a result of those steps, and that's an entire psychic change. But here's the rub. It's one day at a time then. My personal opinion is I think all 12-step programs have watered down one day at a time to one day at a time white-knuckling our food. The big book only talks about one day at a time after we get to step 10, and it talks about a daily reprieve from the mental twist. And this is what I like to think. I'm Cinderella. And I get to go to the ball every night because of Overeaters Anonymous. But at midnight, my beautiful dress turns into rags, the carriage turns into the pumpkin, and the groomsmen turn into mice, and I wake up every morning an untreated compulsive overeater. But the beauty is I have a treatment. And I get to be Cinderella all over again. But if I don't work this program, if that entire psychic change is not complete, and I don't continue to do this over and over again, what happens is the mental twist comes back, I succumb to the desire again, the phenomenon of craving develops, I go through the well-known stages of the spree, emerging remorseful with the firm resolution, I'm not going to frickin' do this again. This is pretty depressing stuff, isn't it? Step one sucks, people. Anyone who's happy about step one, in my opinion, is not taking step one. Because this is vital information, but it's not comfortable information. And I started to get a little squirrely. So let's go into the chapter, There's a Solution. And we're going to go to page 20. You got a drink. So we talked about that 90% that Dr. Silkworth was talking about. So this is going to talk about that 90%. If we go to that the third paragraph, it's going to be a bunch of questions. And these are not questions that I would ask another compulsive overeater. These are the questions people who care about us ask us. This is the frothy emotional appeal that the Dr. Pidgeon talks about. So it says, I can take it or leave it alone. Why can't he? Why don't you drink like a gentleman or quit? Just cut it in half. Have the rest tomorrow. put a picture of your favorite celebrity on the refrigerator, and that'll be your motivation not to open up the fridge. The fellow can't handle his liquor. Why don't you try beer or wine? Lay off the hard stuff. Just eat sugar-free candy. Buy the diet stuff. Eat organic. Eat the zero-point food. I remember talking about this at an AA meeting. I'm not an alcoholic. I go to AA meeting. And this guy, 40 years sober, and I had outed myself as a hard drinker. And he came to me after I told him I was in OA. And he said, Kim, I heard about this great ketosis diet or something like that. And I looked at him. I'm like, Joe, are you kidding me? He's like, what do you mean? He said, well, why don't you just drink natural wine? And he went, is that what I just said to you? And I'm like, yes. Which is why I go to Alcoholics Anonymous, because of 2 through 11. But I can't do 1 or 12 in AA. The reason there's 200 12-step programs is because we are powerless over different things and we have to carry the message to different people. But the essence, the alcoholic mind is me, which is why this big book is me, because it talks about the alcoholic mind, which is no different. She's such a sweet girl, I should think he'd stop for her. Kim, I know you want to go to the prom. If you lose some weight, someone will ask you to go to the prom. I went to the prom with my brother's friend. No one asked me to prom. The doctor told him if he ever drank again, it would kill him, but there he is, all lit up again. I always think about my best friend's a doctor, and she had told me she could call me one night, and she was frustrated because she had a patient that was like 450 pounds, diabetic, was having toes removed the next day from her diabetes. And she went to check on her, and she was eating cheesecake with her family. And she's like, I don't understand it. Why would she do that? And my media thought was, well, she's losing the toes anyways. What's the difference? That's the alcoholic mind. So one of the things that I find helpful for me is to not find out who I am, is to look at what I am not. So first of all, I am not a compulsive shopper. You guys have Costco out here? Okay. So Costco is a huge thing in Jersey, and people go crazy spending all this money. And if someone came to me and said, Kim, I can't control myself, I'm spending too much money at Costco, what I would say to them is, well, why don't you make a list? And then just don't buy anything off the list. Or set yourself a dollar amount and just say, I'm not going to spend more than $100 when I go into Costco. Or, you know, if it's really, really difficult for you, why don't you just go to Costco every other month? And that makes total sense to me because I don't have a problem with shopping. Flip that. What have people been telling me for years? Kim, why don't you just write your food down and don't eat anything off that list? Why don't you set how many points or how many calories you're going to eat for the day and just don't eat above those points or calories? Or Kim, do you really have a problem with pizza? Just go to the pizza joint every other month. And I look at them like they're crazy. Because I am the 90% when it comes to shopping, and I'm part of the 10% when it comes to food. Does that make sense to everybody? I'm sorry about that. You're probably one of us. So now they talk with it, and it says the moderate drinkers have little trouble in giving up liquor entirely. They have a good reason to do it. They can take it or leave it alone. So I always think of my brother. My brother's never had a problem with food. Him and his wife sold their townhouse and were having a house built, and they lived with his in-laws for 6 months. And about 3 months in, I saw him, and he put on like 30 pounds. And I'm like, Jeff, what's going on? He's like, oh my God, Kim, Mrs. Connolly is such a good cook. I come home every night, she has a full meal, 2 desserts. Oh, it's awesome. Well, 6 months, he moves into his new house. I see him, the 30 pounds are gone. Why? Because when it's not there, he doesn't care. Is that my experience with food? Absolutely not. And then they talk about the hard drinker. The hard drinker is someone who might even be one of our eating buddies. But they get the diagnosis of diabetes, and they change everything that they're doing. They decide they want to get married, and they lose the weight, and they're fine. A sufficient reason happens, and they're good enough. And the reason this is very clear to me is because I am the hard drinker. I never had a drink until I went to college. I drank alcoholically for 10 years. I could tell a good AA story because of the consequences I've had with alcohol. But when I was 27 years old, and I was at a club, and I was less drunk than my friend, I offered the driver home, went down the wrong way down a highway, and almost killed us both. I've never drank again. Actually, that's not true. I did drink 3 years later, and I thought to myself, I had a beer. I thought, well, if I'm not going to get drunk, why do I want a beer? So obviously, I don't have the allergy, because I could care less. But if I had been caught that night, if I had you know, caught many of the nights I drank and drove, what would the courts have told me? They would have told me I was an alcoholic. And they would have sentenced me to AA. And I would have gone into some contemporary AA meetings where they said, put the plug in the jug, don't drink, go to meetings. And I would have been successful. And I would have said, okay, I'll sponsor people, and I would have killed a real alcoholic, because a real alcoholic can't do that. So I just want to put in this warning. If you are that 10%, you need to find a sponsor who's part of that 10%. Because there's a lot of hard eaters in LA. There's a lot of moderators, and everyone is welcome. The third tradition means anyone is welcome. But I have to know who I am. And I can't stay abstinent and happy on the advice of someone in that 90%. So I need to sponsor the real compulsive overeater, and I need to be sponsored by the real compulsive overeater. So let's go to page 24, and I'm going to go about 5 more minutes, Wendy, okay? Okay. So page 24, in the squiggly writing, it says, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory and the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. So if I'm the real compulsive overeater, I have no choice, I have no willpower, and I have no memory. You know, it's interesting, on the plane coming here, I happened to sit next to a guy that's from Philadelphia area that runs a rehab, and had some really nice conversations with him, but he's not an addict. And he's actually, the place sounded really impressive. But if I went to his rehab and he said to me, Kim, what's your drug of choice? Because that's what most rehabs are going to ask. The honest truth is alcohol. I drank alcoholically and I chose not to. I tried pot in college. The thought of getting arrested scared me, so I didn't smoke anymore. I have chosen not to eat over and over and over, and I continue to eat. I don't have choice when it comes to this, which is why I need access to a power greater than myself. I have willpower in a lot of areas of my life. I got my master's degree in relapse. I can make some crap happen, people. But when it comes to my food, I have no willpower whatsoever. I'm the kind of person that will negotiate with the cable company to save $5 a month and turn around and go to Wawa or 7-Eleven and spend $80. I don't have willpower. And not with sufficient force. So I heard Harlan was here a couple years ago, right? So why isn't everyone recovered? It sounds like a sprinkling of you are. It sounds like a sprinkling of you are. But I'm sure that everyone who's heard Harlan is not recovered. Because I don't know about, I mean, I remember hearing a great speaker, and I don't think I'm going to be in the middle of a Dairy Queen thinking, you know what? Harlan says. War stories are not, my war stories don't keep me abstinent. Why do I think someone else's war stories are going to keep me abstinent? And it says here, at certain times. That's what confused the heck out of me. Because at certain times, stuff would work. At certain times, going to a meeting would work. Certain times, it wouldn't. At certain times, making a phone call worked. At certain times, it wouldn't. And I don't know when that time's going to be. So to me, it's like Russian roulette. I have a gun. I got 6 chambers. I have 1 bullet in it. I'm willing to take that chance. I got a 5 in 6 chance of getting away with it. But the insanity is in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. I continue to progress in my illness, and I've now got 5 bullets in the chamber, and I'm still pulling the freaking gun. I'm pulling the trigger. I'm going to have to take you on the road. But that's the insanity of this. So let me, I actually brought some hand up. I'm going to try to sprinkle through here, but I wrote a bunch of OA sayings down. That works for the 90%. Meeting makers make it. Meeting makers make a lot of meetings, people. I have bad news. Meetings do not treat compulsive overeating. Hopefully they'll expose you to the solution and then you have to take action, but they don't treat it. 90 and 90? 91, day 91 I'm going to pick up. don't drink, go to meetings. Nancy Reagan doesn't work with me. Just say no. Think the drink through. I'm being told I have no memory. We have to let the tiger out of the cage 3 times a day. Did you ever hear that saying? That's BS. I enjoy my food. I have to tell you, I always say, I love showers. My showers are my favorite time of the day. I live alone. I have 3 shampoos, 3 conditioners, and 3 body washes in my shower. I love showers. I don't think of my shower 10 minutes afterwards. That's how my food is. I enjoy my food. It's not a tiger. I go on and I enjoy the rest of my life until that next meal happens, and I thoroughly enjoy my food, and I go on with my life until the next meal happens. This is not a tiger. Living life on life's terms. Living life on life's terms to me means greed. That was my problem. I was trying to live by other people's rules, by being successful, getting that degree, getting that guy, getting that money in the bank. I have to live life on God's terms. That's what gives me freedom today. Take what you want and leave the rest. The reason that saying came up was because in the 60s and 70s, AA started to become junior therapy sessions, and people were getting up and doing these drunkalogs. And they're like, take what you want and leave the rest of people's opinions. I took it as a step. Okay, I'll take the odd numbers. I'll leave the even on the table. It works if you work it. What the heck is it? No one told me what it was. I'm like, okay, tell me what it is. We already went over this. Nothing tastes as good as abstinence feels. Avoid your triggers. I only have one trigger. Being awake. If I'm awake and I'm untreated, there's a damn good chance I'm going to eat. Keep it green. And I think that's it. But those are the sayings that this is telling me that I'm not going to be able to do if I'm the real compulsive overeater. So I'm going to have Wendy come up, and Wendy needs to make an announcement. And I think, would you mind if we just took a 5-minute break to kind of get started? Was that okay, or would you guys really need a 10-minute break? Okay.
Thank you, Kim. All right. Yeah. Can you guys hear me well? I'm not on. Is my mic? Nope. How about this one? Is this on? Ooh. Okay. So here's the way breaks work. It's currently 8:10. Don't get up yet. We'll be meeting here in 5 minutes, so that would be 8:15. You guys are good. So during each break, we'll be collecting any questions you may have for Kim in the Ask It basket that can be found right there. It's the center in the back. Jan is now lifting up the basket. We're making this very easy, super literal. Okay, and then we'll play some music. Once the music mellows down, Kim will be addressing a few of these questions. As you re-enter the room, please be respectful of the speaker by coming in quietly and finishing your conversation at the door. If your questions don't get answered, feel free to go to the gathering place during future breaks to seek out recovered members that can address your questions. So 5 minutes is not long, so I suggest strongly that you just hang, but that's just me. If you have it, ask it. Basket's back there, and 5 minutes. Thanks.